This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, this is The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mukhtar. Malaysia has been in the grip of the COVID-19 pandemic for over 600 days now. According to the timeline of Malaysia's National Recovery Plan set out in June, the country will fully reopen and return to normalcy by the end of the year. And as the rate of vaccinations increase, we are seeing a corresponding reduction in new infections. We're seeing states slowly progressing through the phases of the NRP, with the Klang Valley currently in phase 3. So the question we're asking today is, has Malaysia weathered the worst of the pandemic? And what are the key lessons we should internalize for future pandemics? Joining me today for a discussion on this is Datuk Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarul-Zaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. Prof. Adiba, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you, Shazana. Thanks for having me.
Back in August, while new infections were still on an uptrend, you did express caution about reopening the economy too quickly. How would you assess the situation that we're in today, given the downward trend in daily new cases and total adult vaccinations reaching about the 90% threshold? I mean, are we seeing the light at the end of the tunnel finally?
I'd like to think so. I think we need to be optimistic. We need to kind of cautiously appreciate, you know, the hard work that got us here, both in terms of course, the vaccination program that has reached so many of the population now, and that's been instrumental in bringing the numbers down, but also in the other public health measures and clinical efforts to really grapple with the number of infections that we had at the peak of our crisis, if you like. So it's very pleasing to see the numbers coming down, particularly in Greater Klang Valley, that I think saw the full force of the Delta surge. But, you know, at the same time, we need to not let the foot off the pedal, because there are still states with high number of, still seeing a rise in infections. And my own home state, unfortunately, Kelantan is one of those. Mm. So cautious optimism is what I would say, and still always keeping an eye on what's going on.
Mm. Most people tend to look at number of daily new infections and also the vaccination rate. I think those are the two metrics that many of us do keep a regular eye on. But other pandemic indicators that you're monitoring, which give you a cause for concern, which I suppose is the dampener in the overall optimism that many may be feeling.
Yeah, I think looking at the absolute number of new cases daily is important. But because the difference in terms of vaccine coverage across the entire nation, it's also very important to look at, you know, the percentage of severe cases versus non-severe cases, because ultimately it's the severe cases, deaths, and how the health systems are coping are what, you know, in a way matters. Because what happened in the Greater Klang Valley between June and the end of August, early September, was the health system was just completely overwhelmed. And that's when, you know, you start getting higher than expected death rates. So hospital bed utilization, ICU utilization, breakthrough infections are also an important figure to keep an eye on, especially in terms of the severe cases and hospitalization with breakthrough infections. The vaccines, we acknowledge, are not 100% foolproof in terms of preventing infections. It's done an amazing job in terms of reducing severe cases and deaths, but, you know, we're seeing what's called breakthrough infection. So again, we need to keep an eye on that, because we're using all kinds of different types of vaccines all over the country.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have more on vaccinations in just a bit. I want to focus now on the gradual reopening of the economy. So we're seeing Klang Valley entering phase three of the National Recovery Plan just last week. The government is targeting for Malaysia to enter the endemic stage by the end of October, and the NRP projects full recovery by the end of the year. Is this a realistic timeline, do you think?
Really, a lot hinges on the vaccine coverage. You know, if we can get upwards of 90% of the population, of the total population, not just adults, right? If we can get as many 12-year-olds and older vaccinated, then I think we can breathe a little bit easier, pardon the pun. As I said, we've seen how remarkable a turnaround once you hit a certain percentage of coverage with the vaccine. What does endemicity mean? I think even WHO has not come to a set of indicators, but for our purposes, I think we're working on indicators that, again, hinges on health system. You know, we are going to have to accept that there'll be a level of infection. So what is that acceptable level of infection right across the country? And in a way, I guess it depends for different parts of the country. In areas where there's a lot of hospital beds, there's a lot of ICUs, then you may be able to accept slightly higher levels of infection. In areas where you only have a few ICU beds, then you have to be more cautious, right? But then again, I can't say this enough, it does depend on how many people are vaccinated, because, you know, you accept that people will still get infected, breakthrough infections, but what you don't want is severe infection. Unfortunately, yesterday I was doing rounds in the ward at PPUM and saw patients who came in with breakthrough infections, and as well as patients who refused vaccination. So we definitely need to work harder to reach those people who are vaccine hesitant, and you know, whether they're Malaysians or non-Malaysians, and perhaps consider widening the vaccine mandate beyond just civil servants.
I want to pivot a little bit to look at the subject of reopening and looking at interstate travel. And we're seeing the government experimenting with controlled reopening of state borders, such as through the Langkawi travel bubble. And this week, there was news that a cluster of cases have emerged in Langkawi, and a hotel was closed down temporarily after nearly 60 staff tested positive. So how should we interpret these kinds of developments, yeah, especially as we move towards this endemic stage where we're supposed to live with the virus and accept a certain number of cases, certain number of deaths? I guess, how would you see this?
Yeah, so I think there are measures, and COVID-19 has infamously made, you know, the Swiss cheese model very, very important. So whilst I've spoken mostly about the vaccine, but having a testing strategy in place is also important. And so, for instance, testing, especially before long flights, you know, testing before and after. This is something that needs to be thought through very, very carefully, because it, you know, it costs money, although now, you know, you can get really good quality tests for a few ringgit. But, you know, at the same time, you don't want to overburden employers. So there are a number of research, both local and overseas, that can guide us into making sound testing policies.
Okay.
So for example, with the hotels, I think once again, mandating the staff, mandating people who come, and maybe, you know, depending on the number of staff they have, even looking at, say, weekly testing, particularly if the area where the hotel is at, the level of transmission is still not at a satisfactory level. So we've been toying with this idea of having what's known as alert levels. I mean, zero means, or alert level one means, you know, very, very low levels of infection, right to level four, where you then start to tighten the freedom once again. And But instead of having a statewide or nationwide kind of tightening and loosening, now that, you know, data is much more available and at a more specific level, perhaps the restrictions can be much more local. I think that's how we need to move forward, you know, by having much more precise data so that people can act on it at a much more local level rather than subjecting the entire state to strict restrictions. And I think YB Minister of Health is also, you know, being very open with the data. And I think once we get that more sorted out in terms of having data that people can actually say, oh, wait a minute, you know, my area now has high level infection, maybe it's not a great idea to go and dine in the restaurant now, for example, you know, just for this next couple of weeks until we bring the numbers down again. So I think that's the kind of tightening and loosening that moving forward we will have to learn to live with.
Prof Fatima, but is there a reason why this kind of data isn't already available, given that we have been collecting such data through MySejahtera for a good part of the year? I suppose, what is actually hampering the sharing of data in that manner that would allow us to make these decisions on an individual basis?
Not all the data is collected on MySejahtera, you know, because testing happens in all kinds of different venues, at public hospital, private hospital, labs, you know, so all that data need to be collated, if you like, analyzed, cleaned up. And again, I think that's been one of our weak points that I believe is being sorted out and looked into. Yeah, but data is key. There's a mantra in the HIV world that, you know, I've spent almost my entire career in, is know your epidemic, know your response. And that really speaks to making sure that, you know what's happening, who are the most affected groups, so that you can respond appropriately.
I'm speaking to Datuk Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarulzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. When we come back, we go behind the high COVID-19 case numbers and the death toll in Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Hello, I'm Shazana Mokhtar. Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. Today, I'm speaking to Datuk Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarulzaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. Prof Adiba, earlier you were talking about breakthrough infections and the need to keep in mind just how many breakthrough infections are occurring, how severe those breakthrough infections are. And this is in light of data emerging that vaccines are waning in efficacy over time. Firstly, I want to ask about in terms of efficacy of different vaccines. I mean, we are seeing a surge of cases in Sarawak despite the high vaccination rate there. I mean, is this down to the type of vaccine that has been distributed there? And if so, is there an argument to be made then for reducing reliance on that specific type of vaccine overall?
Very good question, Shazana. And I think everyone through Tanya, what is going on in Sarawak, huh? But I think before we make assumptions, we really need to look at the data in a lot more detail, as in who is getting infected, when in the vaccine schedule they're getting infected, what types of vaccine, how severe it is, what is the proportion of people who are being tested. So before we jump to conclusions, having said that, I think there are signals in terms of the inactivated vaccine perhaps are not performing as well as the mRNA vaccine. Even from my own observation in patients who have been admitted to PPUM, even before the breakthrough infections, right, we knew that the mRNA vaccines were performing better than the inactivated vaccines in countries where, you know, rollouts have been of the vaccination program have been done. And, you know, in terms of the real world effectiveness data, once again, the mRNA and also the AstraZeneca vaccine seem to do better than the inactivated vaccine. And of course, you know, you have to factor in the Delta variant, et cetera, et cetera. So that's why I'm, you know, a little hesitant to say vaccine X is better than vaccine Y and for Malaysia until we have done really in-depth analysis of our data.
But that said, I suppose having an inactivated vaccine is much better than remaining unvaccinated.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
So people shouldn't refrain from getting vaccinated just because they want to hold out for that mRNA vaccine. They should get vaccinated with whatever is available.
That goes without saying, yes, you know, being vaccinated with any of the vaccines better than not being vaccinated at all is number one. And number two is for those who've been vaccinated with the inactivated vaccine, there is no reason to panic, you know, and rush out to get, you know, either your third vaccine, either with the same vaccine type or with a different type. The percentage of breakthrough infections is still very low. And again, that's why it's important to see of the breakthrough, what percentage have severe infection and what percentage has led to mortality.
Mm. And Malaysia has decided to roll out booster shots, although they're only doing that for high-risk groups at the moment. But do you see booster shots becoming the norm for the whole population eventually?
Well, I think it's hard to predict what's going to happen in the future. You know, first and foremost, the purpose of the vaccine is to protect against severe disease and death. And we know the groups of people who are at more risk of severe disease and death. So I think that's where the priority lies right now. And as the pandemic unfolds, as, you know, new variants come through, as we get better at managing it, I think we don't have all the answers right now, and we have to continue to keep an open mind, keep an eye on the science, keep an eye on what it's telling us, keep an eye on what's happening in our own country to make those decisions.
Mm. Turning our attention to Malaysia's stats, because Malaysia does have the highest tally of COVID-19 deaths per capita in the region, and even our case numbers are high considering our total population. I mean, what do you think is behind these high numbers? Does it reflect the state of health in Malaysia? Is it down to the prevalence of non-communicable diseases among our population?
The number of deaths distresses me as an infectious disease physician who actually manage patients with COVID, and it's really unfortunate. But I think in terms of the overall number, I do wonder if we underestimated the actual number, you know, per capita, that our denominator is a little bit off. We probably haven't factored in the significant number of undocumented migrants, non-Malaysians in the country, so that denominator may not be absolutely correct. Consequently, we actually had a lot more infection than we did. So the percentage of deaths per number of infection may not be so accurate, because there were actually perhaps many, many more people who were infected who were not factored in. And I think this speaks to what YB Minister of Health said the other day, that, you know, 86% of people who were brought in dead were not in touch with the health system, and significant number of deaths proportionately were among the non-Malaysians. So that's one factor. And the reasons why there's a higher risk or higher death rate amongst non-Malaysians. And this speaks to the inequalities that were seen, that people from the lower income group were disproportionately affected by the pandemic. For whatever reasons, maybe non-Malaysians, were not so aware about the disease and the, you know, the course it may take. B, may fear coming forward because of repercussions in terms of arrest if they're not documented, or fear of the cost of actual healthcare. So I think there are a number of things that we need to look at in greater detail if we want to address this for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, for Malaysians, again, I think the number of young people who died may also be proportionately higher than what it should be. You know, the fact that we are the fattest nation in the region, 50% of our people are overweight or obese, and also nearly a third of Malaysians have diabetes. And we know that those two conditions lead to severe COVID-19. It's a really fascinating pathophysiology of it, of why people who are overweight and diabetic run into more trouble. That's for another show.
Okay, but I guess sticking to that theme of NCD prevalence, there has been criticism that the government isn't doing enough to address the long-term healthcare issues associated with the NCDs, most recently exemplified in the 12th Malaysia Plan. I mean, do you agree with this view? And could the government be doing more to prioritize NCDs in its healthcare strategy? And what do you think it should be prioritizing overall?
Personally, I think we got into the trouble that we did with COVID-19 in terms of not being able to respond more effectively is because of the decades of underinvestment in public health, full stop. So the healthcare capacity was divided into the health workforce and also investment in healthcare. And we spent in 2016 3.6% of the GDP on health. I think it went up slightly in the last few years, but certainly well below 5. And for the level of development we are and aiming to become a developed nation, we really should be sitting around 8, 10. So I think the years of underinvestment in public health per se, when I say public health, there's the public health that you all are familiar with in terms of the one ringgit care that you get at Klinik Kesihatan and one ringgit care that you get at government hospitals versus going to a private hospital. And then there's a public health discipline, which is, you know, as opposed to acute care. And they are the people who are extremely important when it comes to a pandemic like this. You know, colleagues who, the PKDs, for instance, the people, you know, who respond to a positive test, to do the contact tracing, make sure you're isolated, the home surveillance. One of the reasons why we got into trouble was the PKDs were just overwhelmed when Delta hit, right? The systems are not automated, the hardware, you know, in many of the PKD centers were outdated. So I think the number one focus has got to be investment in public health in general, but public health discipline in particular, a greater focus on prevention in general, and that includes putting in place surveillance systems for diseases like this, for emerging diseases such as, you know, COVID-19 or Nipah or dengue or TB, you know, proper surveillance systems in place, and also prevention. Yeah, so NCD comes into play, obesity, diabetes, cancer. We don't do well at all in terms of preventing very, very preventable cancers like colorectal cancer, cervical cancer, breast cancer. I'm told that the percentage of expenditure is 70% towards hospital care and 30% towards prevention care, whereas it really should at least be equal, if not the other way around. So a greater focus on prevention, a greater focus on community-based care, particularly as our older people, as our community, our population age. And then, of course, specifically in a country where 50% of people are overweight, really, really pay attention to obesity and diabetes. But to me, it's not a job for Ministry of Health alone in terms of tackling obesity and diabetes. You know, the built environment, we got to encourage people to be out there, do sports, and it's got to start from young. You know, so every ministry has to play a role. You know, whether you need to put you know, sugar tax and things like that. A whole revolution and a mindset change.
Yeah. So it really does require a revolution, like you said, a revolution mm-hmm. in the way we think of health, in the way that we think of eating. And this would definitely require a whole of government kind of approach.
Absolutely.
Professor Adiba, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I've been speaking to Datuk Professor Dr. Adiba Kamarul-Zaman, Professor of Medicine and Infectious Diseases at University Malaya. Professor Adiba was a panelist at the special session on pandemic and public health during the Khazanah Megatrends Forum 2021 this week. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.